Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. If y'all are like us, you've exhausted everywhere else you find your documentaries on the strange and unusual and the fun. And if you like grand conspiracies and more breakaway societies, paranormal, ancient civilizations like we all do, and UFOs, well, we've found the place right at your fingertips, folks. You can stream videos from anywhere, from your living room or on the go, with access to over 7,000 titles, all on Gaia.com, G-A-I-A. Now, you can get this for a monthly plan of $9.95 a month. Your first month will only be 99 cents. Now, there is a three-month plan and an annual plan. So, if you're into the things that we're into, and judging by what you're listening to, you are, start enjoying Gaia.com. Expand your perspective even more. G-A-I-A.com. And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, starting the new year off right, sitting across the table from me. Well, I guess it didn't come true. He's still here. I didn't get my New Year's resolution. He showed up like a cold sore, Mr. Kyle Filio-Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I want to wish everyone out there a happy new year. 2016 was an amazing year for Expanded Perspectives, and I can only speculate is what's going to happen in 2017 with the show. We've got several new changes coming up to the show. You'll be learning about that at some point in the future. But I'm excited, man. The show's growing. We're getting more sponsors, things like that, which is showing that we're doing a good job. I appreciate everyone joining us here, especially people that are joining to Elite now. A lot of people got Elite for Christmas. Very cool. Speaking of Christmas gifts, if you listened to the last Elite show for you Elite listeners, we kind of talked about the gifts that we got for Christmas. And one of the gifts I got was this Himalayan salt block for grilling on.
How'd it work?
I went to my local butcher that I always go to. They only use cattle from this county and stuff. They always, grass-fed, very good beef. I've been going there since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I tried to go in there and get my favorite cut. My favorite cut is the KC strip or the New York strip. But, it was being New Year's Day weekend. They were sold out. So I was like, all right, well, give me a filet. So I got these jam-up filets. So I got my Himalayan salt block up, and I slowly brought the temperature from room temperature up to about 400 degrees over probably the course of an hour, just slowly raising the temperature in the oven. And then when I was ready to get it going, dinner that is, I transferred it to my grill, my gas grill, and I began cooking the fillets on there. So I cooked it. It was really wild to watch it because, you're not supposed to use any marinades or anything like that because it already was absorbing some of the salt from the block. And I got me some lobster tails. I mean, I had everything going. Now, I will say, this is the first time I've cooked a steak without marinating it at all. I can't even tell you, maybe deer season.
Maybe ever.
10 years ago or something, just because I didn't have it with me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was just a particularly really great cut of meat that I don't normally get fillets. And not that I've never had them. I just don't normally eat that. I normally eat the KC strip and the New York strip. Or it was, in fact, this Himalayan salt block. But that was some of the most jam-up steak I've ever eaten. So I told my wife, I go, look, it's blowing my mind. Next week, I'm going to go do the same thing, except I'm going to cook one the way I traditionally do. And on the salt block, the same cut of meat. And I want to see, have the taster's choice. I'm going to blindfold
the cook-off.
People. Yeah.
There you go.
It was amazing. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, these Himalayan salt blocks. It's a large block of thick salt. I mean, it's like 2 inches thick.
It looks like a marble slab, but it's all pink Himalayan salt.
Yeah, and you can grill on this stuff. You can go on YouTube and check out the videos. It is awesome.
My son's got one.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
And it's like twice as big as the, I mean, it's huge. And I was blown away because he's cooked over at our house on it several times. He'd bring it over. And I was like, this makes no sense, man.
Well, I started looking into it. They have different ones. They have ones for heating and cooking on. They have other ones that they say you can put in a deep freeze. Mm-hmm. Keep it cold and you can lay sushi or whatever out. And it'll keep stuff cold for a while. They even have a mortar and pestle made out of that Himalayan salt. And when you grind something down, it actually takes some of that salt.
You're going to have all of these, aren't you?
Dude. I'm going to have everything.
He's falling. He's got to get his kit. Well, it's funny you bring that up because I did the same thing. I bought some steaks, except I tried a little aging time, whereas you cover it in kosher salt and age it. And I've had steaks now aged for 1 day to 3 days. And then you wash them and then you pat them dry. And then, of course, you season them how you want and grill them like normal. And it's the same thing. The salt aging helps a steak out tremendously.
And how was it?
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. It was the whole deal. And then I also took asparagus and I hand wrapped them in bacon, each individual one, then slow baked them, the little salt and pepper on it. Holla at you, boy.
I had asparagus too. That's what we had. We had lobster tails, asparagus, the steak. And I'll tell you some oddities at the local grocery store buying the asparagus. And the lady that was checking me out, she probably was 56. She's like, "You like that?" I'm like, "What?" She's like, "The asparagus." I go, "Asparagus? Yeah, I love it. It's great." She's like, "I've never had it." I was like, "You've never had asparagus?" She's like, "No. How do you cook it?"
It's one of my favorite things.
So I told her, I was like, "Wow, how can you be that old and never have tried asparagus?"
Does it make you piecemeal funny?
It does. And I don't know why.
I don't know. Mine
almost
too.
Almost instantaneously.
Yeah.
Like literally from the time I swallow it to five minutes.
Yeah.
It's already doing it. I wonder what that is.
I don't know. I have no idea, but I'm disgusting because every time I eat it and then I pee, I'm like, this is so terrible. This is so horrible.
Well,
I don't know what's wrong with me.
For any new listener that's listening, you're probably like, what is this, a cooking show? Yeah. I don't understand. Let's get into the
news. We just like to eat, folks. Sorry, we got all excited. We like to
Everybody likes to eat, Cam.
It's the new. I especially do if you look at me. I've got anything. If it's got chocolate, if it's got beer, if I don't know. I'm down for whatever. I'm also down for this. Most of the time, only you elitists get this part of the show. I usually do this news stories like this, and you're the ones that get treated to it. But this time, it's for everybody. Folks, this comes from our good friends at Cryptozoology News. Former soldier and wife come upon a flying creature in Alabama. Roll Tide. Margaret, Alabama. A former soldier on Friday says he saw an unidentified flying creature in St. Clair County. The fella's name is Mike, 48-year-old Margaret resident. Now, he told Cryptozoology News that he and his wife were driving when they noticed this creature coming out of the trees located on the side of the road. Mike had this to say. We ducked our heads because we thought it was going to hit the truck. Then, this very large flying bird thing stopped midair over our front window of the truck and dipped its head, looked at us, then zoomed in and then flew away to the left of us. Like zoomed down.
Yeah,
and
then phew, I'm picturing
banked
like
off.
The Mothman.
Yeah, banked off. He says he continued for about, a little bit later, but he said this whole thing was early morning. You know, he's driving along, he sees it, he said it goes, he watched it fly away, he's driving along, all of it early morning. Now, he says the former military man claims that he was able to gather a physical description of the creature. Now, this is what he says. It had something red about its face or head. Its wings were very large. And he says he recalls this, that adding that the unknown animal was wider than their Dodge Durango, which is an SUV that they're driving over, folks. He says it was huge and an unreal creature.
Wow.
That's what he claims about it. Now, I don't know. Okay. We love to do this. We always talk about it and we go back, what could it be? So we're going to play what could it be. Now, you remember I covered this a year or so ago. We've talked about people seeing giant birds. And it's like 2015 was like the year for it a couple of years ago. There was a lot of reports of people in Michigan, people in Nevada. We had people in Louisiana said they saw some crazy flying creature. Some dude up several years ago saw one outside of Tucson, Arizona, a big one. It was in a state park, a bird watcher.
I think you're right.
In a state park we talked about. So, he's talking about something large, as big as the Durango. It's red about its head or face. Could this thing be a giant condor? Don't they have some of that red, you know, what is it, like the wattles, the crest, the comb, whatever it is around there? Could this be something like
that? I have no idea. But because yeah, if you sounds know good I
mean?
To me.
Right. If you notice, he's not saying it had hands. He just says it's a very large bird thing.
Well, I think you could be right. And what like we talked about on the show so many times is when you see something sometimes for just a split second, you were talking about it just in the recent show about a black bear when you were in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
You instantly increased the size of it. Maybe really wasn't as big as it appeared. It was just a large owl. It's like a great horned owl or something.
Could be, yeah.
I've seen some of those and while hunting and stuff, and they look massive if it just catches you out of the blue. Was it really as big as he thought? You know, I'm not saying he's a liar. I'm saying, you know, I don't know.
I would, well, it's one of those things. It's fun to play devil's advocate and go, okay, maybe you saw something and you misidentified it and the whole thing. But okay, and what if you didn't?
Yeah, what if you didn't?
You know, what if it really is a, but when he says bird thing, I'm like, I wish there was a little bit better description. You tell me it's red about, could you give me a little bit more detail? When you say bird thing, was it a bird? Was it more pterodactyl-like?
Yeah.
More roping-like?
Doesn't get into it. But
that's,
you know,
what I want to see.
Authors like John Keel and Ivan T. Sanderson and stuff, I mean, they've interviewed many of these witnesses who claim to see these bizarre things. So I don't know. Maybe there is something out there. But speaking of bizarre encounters, check this out. This came from an anonymous caller from Aurora, Illinois, who called into Coast to Coast back in 2000. And they described his weird encounter while driving from Peoria in June of that year. And he said, my buddy and I were on our way to Peoria, which is about an hour and a half away. No one was around. It's just one of those real clear nights. A warm summer's night. It happened in June. Anyway, we're going along. Nobody around us around 11:45 at night, if I remember right. We're driving. Going about 55 miles per hour, we're in the right-hand lane. In the left-hand lane appears out of its own mist a green figure about 7 feet tall. You know what it had on? A cape with no face. I couldn't tell if it was fat or skinny. And it's standing still in the left-hand lane, and it never budges. With its arm draped out side to side, I tell you, it was the Grim Reaper. It was the only thing I could think of. I used to laugh at people who would tell me about the Grim Reaper. Right, when I was thinking, that was the Grim Reaper. And I kept it to myself until my buddy said, what was that? And I thought Grim Reaper in my mind, and then he said it out loud. And I looked at him with a straight face and said, yeah, I think it was. That was the summertime in June, and I'll never forget it like it happened yesterday. That thing was at least 7 feet tall. I never saw it again. I never want to see it again. But it was as real as you and I talking right now. So that's a pretty interesting story.
Yeah.
I mean, could it have been just a guy who happened to be crazy huge, you know, like an NBA basketball player or something, dressed up in a cloak and cape or something, standing by the road? Yeah, I guess it could be.
It could be, but.
But.
What's the odds of that really happening?
Very odd sighting. In fact, I may do an episode of this coming up soon where there's been several accounts of people seeing the Grim Reaper. I mean, we do stories about all types of sightings, shadow people, hat man. But actual sightings of what people believe are the Grim Reaper.
Of what our interpretation of the Grim Reaper is.
Yeah,
that would be a little unnerving, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Can you imagine just, it's not like seeing the Slender Man or something, but it's almost like we always talk about, it's almost like, well, you're kind of conditioned by now to go, okay, that's the Slender Man. You know, you panic, but you're like, oh. But to see the Grim Reaper, that only has one meaning.
Yeah. What's you or that? Someone's about to die.
Yeah, he's coming to get somebody. I always think, what is the movie with Michael J. Fox where he is... Man, I wish I could remember.
Goes back in time.
No,
in a DeLorean.
You're right. What is it? He is. He's like a ghost hunter. He can speak to the ghosts, and he's. Oh, you don't remember that one, do you?
I don't think so.
Man, I cannot remember the name of it. It's an older movie. I'm gonna have to look it up now, right here while we're sitting here. I'm gonna have to look up Michael J. Fox ghost movie. Let's see what I've come up with. There it is. What is this thing called? I've got to tell everybody about this. I'm sure somebody's... The Frighteners. That's what it's called.
Yeah, I've never
somebody's
seen that.
Screaming at the speaker right now. You're so stupid. The Frighteners. Because there's something in there. There's a ghost that he sees in there that flies around, and it looks like the Grim Reaper. So every time I think of the Grim Reaper now, I always think of it as that creature itself. But it's called the Frighteners. But yeah, we need to look into some sightings of that and see what kind of ominous background that maybe it has. Yeah. You know what I mean? Something along those lines.
Yeah, and if you anybody out there listening has had any encounters with the Grim Reaper, please send those stories to
us. Keep them to yourself, folks. I don't want to read those.
You know what I really like is when it comes to these bizarre encounters are the flat man, the two-dimensional flat man.
Yes, that I'm a big fan of that. I love that.
Unfortunately, there's just not that many sightings of it, but that is really bizarre.
Yeah. Well, we're always talking about, we did on the Elite Show, and we've talked about in several past episodes, about people losing their jobs to robots. And we've discussed it recently with the autonomy of these trucks and buses and freighters and things. Well, here's something that I'm not sure how I feel about. I kind of feel uneasy about this. This is actually coming from fizz.org. They've released a little story about a new lie-detecting security kiosk of the future, it says. And it says that when you engage in international travel, that you may one day find yourself face-to-face with border security that's polite, bilingual, and responsive, and robotic. Now, get a load of this. It's called the Automated Virtual Agent for Truth Assessments in Real Time, or the acronym of AVATAR.
That's cool.
It's currently being tested in conjunction with the Canadian Border Services Agency to help border security agents determine whether travelers coming into Canada may have undisclosed motives for entering the country. Now, right here, there's a San Diego State University Management Information Systems professor, Aaron Elkins, and he says this, that AVATAR is a kiosk, much like an airport check-in or grocery store self-checkout kiosk. However, the kiosk has a face on the screen that asks questions of travelers.
Where are you from? Why does your passport say Tarin? You're from Tarin?
It also says, get a load of this, Philly, that it can detect changes in psychology, physiology, and behavior during the interview. And it says the reason it does it is it's looking for this, changes in your eyes, voice, gestures, and posture to determine potential risk. It says it can even tell whether or not you're curling your toes.
Wow.
So it's looking, I guess, for pupil dilation, for the breathing, the changes in your breathing as you get maybe more nervous. It's looking for all of these little things, little tells that most like professional poker players are looking for. That's what this kiosk is looking for.
It's funny that you mention that, because while you're describing this, I'm thinking of not only safety implications at airports and things. I was thinking, how long do they have these on the floors in the casinos like in Vegas?
Yeah.
You can no longer, they know if you've got something going on or you're counting cards or whatever, because
except
they can,
it's showing, you don't know that they're reading it.
Yeah, you don't know
that they're using it.
They probably
it
already
you.
Have that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, Elkins goes on to say this. He says that AVATAR has been tested in labs and airports and border crossing stations. He says the system is fully ready for implementation to help stem the flow of contraband, thwarting fleeing criminals and detecting potential terrorists and many other applications in effort to secure international borders. Because they talk about this is basically how it would work. It says passengers will step up to this kiosk and be asked a series of questions. And it says like such as this, do you have fruits or vegetables in your luggage, or are you carrying any weapons with you? Eye detection software and motion and pressure sensors would monitor the passengers as they answer the questions, looking for telltale physiological signs of lying or discomfort. Says the kiosk would also ask a series of innocuous questions to establish baseline measurements so people are just, you know, the ones that are nervous about flying, they wouldn't just be singled out. Now it says this. My problem with this whole thing is, and I'm sure all of you listening have already picked up and have the exact same problem, is we already know that lie detectors can't be tested 100%. People can beat them, and other people can be nervous and fail them. I'm asking about this, though, is I know people now that have very, I guess you could call it a high level of social anxiety. Some of my daughter's friends have that. Certain people are just anxiety ridden. It's just the way it happens. Certain, you know, it's come out. Some people aren't, some people are. Could this amplify? Could this be able to tell if it's a socially awkward person, or would it still look like, you know, if you start firing questions at someone that is not just worried about flying, but they're worried about having to wash their hands after touching all this stuff. They're worried about the people around them. Too many people are now looking at them. All these eyes are on them. They can't stand being a group of people. They're trying to do anything. Would that throw a flag that there may be nothing wrong that this person is doing, and then unduly these people are taken back and harassed even more? Now, I'm not talking about, you know, physically beaten up, but I'm talking about you're compounding the problem this person's already have now that you've walked them up in front of this kiosk. Whereas if it was a normal face-to-face interaction with a human being, they might be like, look, I know you're having a little trouble. I know there's, you probably got nothing going on. You know, just go ahead and go. It's
especially
fine. It's
when
cool.
You got the autonomous Ed 209 standing there with guns while you're being questioned.
Well, now you're talking. It's, you know what? There's certain things, and I know people can get fooled, but there's also certain things that I'm like, man, I don't want it to be done autonomously. I want it to be done by a human being. And I know it's probably going to save money like we've talked about, but here's the deal. What are we saving all this money for? You're going to put all these robots into play. The companies are going to save all this money. All these other people are going to be out of work, which means we're going to have to, it's a snowball effect. You're going to help out more to pay more to keep these people who are unemployed because you took their jobs away by putting a robot in its place.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I don't like this. I'm not a fan of this kiosk right now. Until they prove to me that, of course, it's never going to be, and I don't know why they got to prove it to me. I don't even know why I said that. I don't know why they got to prove it to me. They don't care. I don't know. I feel uneasy about being judged by a robot.
Yeah. Well, I, unfortunately for you, I think it's coming and there's no stopping it. You're just going to have to get used to it. Speaking of the last crazy story I read about the Grim Reaper, there's another interesting one over here from our friend David Weatherly over on Two Crows Paranormal, and it's about a Black Eyed Kid account that was sent to him, and this happened back in January 20th, 2014 in Tavares, Florida. So check this out. The witness said that they had just left work and was taking a less traveled road home, old Highway 441. Everything was going normal on his typical drive home until he came to a red light. No cars were on the road at all, just him sitting there. Suddenly, it seemed to the witness as if time had stood still, and the sounds became very long and drawn out. After he had come to a stop, out of the darkness on the passenger side of the car, all of a sudden a teenager appeared. He was about 15 feet from the car. He was wearing blue jeans and a hoodie that was up over his head. From what the witness could see, it appeared he had little or no facial expressions. Especially the eyes. The eyes were blacker than the darkest dark. The witness felt fear beyond explanation. He turned his gaze off of the teenager and looked back towards the light when he saw what looked like an identical twin crossing the road very, very slowly in front of his car, as though to hold him up if the light happened to change. The next thing he knew, the boy was at the side of his car, approaching the car as though he was going to get in. The witness, of course, was filled with an overwhelming fear and thought he was going to die. At the time, he remembers thinking, "This is the angel of death." He thought about running the light and had a feeling that somehow the two strange figures were talking to each other, but without talking out loud. As far as he knows, the figure never touched the car. The car started to approach from behind. Another car did, and the light changed. As he was leaving, he looked back and saw both the boys were gone. The witness was so frightened that he thought that the two strange beings were going to show up at his house. Thankfully, they did not. So once again, Angel of Death, Grim Reaper, Black Eyed Kids, I don't know, strange sightings. But you know, when we talk about the stories of time slips and things like that, it always seems to be someone is alone or something, it's dark or whatever, and time seems to slow down for whatever. There's no sound. That's very strange.
The Oz effect that we talk about, everything's, it gets a little funky.
Very, very cool. Well, let's take a break, folks. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about a ghost town up in Alaska. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Scattered across the North American continent are many ghost towns. Places that were once vibrant and alive, but are now long dead and abandoned. Remnants of what once was can often still be found. Old schools, churches, or other buildings, usually in a ramshackle state of decay, stand, albeit perilously, serving as the only reminder that a community once thrived on the spot. A ghost town is, by definition, a deserted town with few or no remaining inhabitants. But the name itself strikes such ghastly imagery in our minds. The term itself invokes thoughts of the old, gray, cobwebbed towns where only the spirits of the dead walk the streets. And in a few of these cases, that could be true. These places were often abandoned for a very specific reason. In some of the cases, they were small towns built around the time of the gold rush and, over time, just could not thrive. Other communities disappear simply because they have exhausted the natural resources which drew people to the area in the first place. Wars, natural disasters, political wrangling, and the like can all be one of the reasons why one community might abandon one in favor of another. One such town lies in Connecticut. Dudley Town is also referred to as the Village of the Damned because of the strange rumors that swirl around it. Founded in the early 1700s, it was a settlement for farmers and was actually never a real town, though has since become one of the most well-known ghost towns in the country. It was actually land owned by the Dudley family, who allowed more people to come in as it grew and thrived for a small time. Problem was, it wasn't the ideal land for farming, so over time, people just sort of left and went to places with richer soil and better farming conditions. The thing is, the place has quite a reputation now. Rumor is that if you visit this abandoned town and take something with you when you leave, you actually have placed a curse upon your family. But you see, that is the thing that makes ghost towns so cool: the statements and rumors that seem to surround them. Perhaps one of the most well-known ghost towns of all in America is the town of Bodie. Bodie was established in 1859 after William Bodie found some gold nearby. Of course, that brought in a decent amount of people who quickly seemed to figure out that William's find was not common. So, just like with most ghost towns, everyone upped and left when they saw it was not going to pan out as planned. What sets Bodie apart from most other ghost towns in the country is that it is the ghost town that still remains, for the most part, untouched. In other words, there's still old shacks that people used to live in. They're still there. Nothing has been reconstructed, nothing has been touched, nothing has been dolled up to make it look better. So, if you were to walk through it today, they say it feels like you're walking through some haunted postcard of a time and place long forgotten. Sometimes, though, you come across the story of a town that was abandoned for other reasons than the ones we already mentioned. In a few cases, towns were deserted for reasons so unique and terrifying that they almost defy belief. One such case is that of the town of Portlock, Alaska. The remains of what was once Portlock sit on the far southwest edge of the Kenai Peninsula, not too far from the northeast of the more well-known Kodiak Island. The settlement was named after Captain Nathaniel Portlock of the Royal Navy, who landed on the peninsula back in 1787. Some Alaska publications say travel to Portlock is possible via ATV, but most locals will dispute it. Just like many places in Alaska, the only real way to see Portlock is to travel there by boat or bush plane. If you somehow were able to actually get to the abandoned town, you would still be able to see the remains of what was once a healthy village. At one time, there was a cannery there, a chromite mine, and a territorial boarding school for the children of the nearby Kenai Peninsula. The town bustled enough that the government deemed a U.S. post office necessary and opened up a branch there in 1921. So,
The town was on the uptake. Things were going well. Small businesses began opening up, and now they were getting their very own post office. And that's the way it was for a while in Portlock. Then, out of the blue, everything changed. When every resident of Portlock picked up stakes and left en masse in 1949. Unlike most doomed communities, which die agonizingly slow deaths, Portlock ceased to exist almost overnight. What could have caused such a sudden and total mass exodus? A story from the Anchorage Daily News, April 15, 1973, may sum up the tale best. Portlock began its existence sometime after the turn of the century as a cannery town. In 1921, a post office was established there, and for a time, the residents, mostly natives of Russian Aleut extraction, lived in peace with their picturesque mountain and sea setting. Then, sometime in the beginning of the years of World War II, rumors began to seep along the Kenai Peninsula that things were not right in Portlock. Men from the cannery town would go up into the hills to hunt for Dall sheep and bear and would never return. Worse yet, the stories ran, sometimes their mutilated bodies would be swept down into the lagoon, torn and dismembered in a way that bears could not or would not do. Tales were told of villagers tracking moose over soft ground. They would find giant, man-like tracks well over 18 inches in length, closing upon those of the moose. The signs of a short struggle were in the grass where it had been matted down, then only the deep tracks of the man-like animal departing toward the high, fog-shrouded mountains with their deep valleys and hidden glaciers. The newspaper story gives but a glimpse into the terror felt by the citizens of Portlock during this time. Everyone in the small town of Portlock knew about the hairy men that inhabited the nearby hills, valleys, and forest. Mostly from stories by elders who grew up in the surrounding areas. The natives had coexisted with the hairy beasts for generations with very few problems. But this was different. The Nantinuk were behaving differently. They were attacking almost anyone who ventured off into the woods. They were stealing livestock, eggs, and growing more and more brazen over time. Their attacks were not only increasing, but they were getting closer and closer to town. Many locals claim that multiple times a week, the town folk would be awoken in the middle of the night by terrible screams and large rocks and boulders that were being hurled at the buildings and some of the residences in the small town. It was clear that whatever these creatures were, some unknown North American wood ape, an underdeveloped hominid, still unknown to modern science, or just some lost tribe of feral wild men living in the remote forest of Alaska, they wanted the people of Portlock out. They didn't want them living there anymore, and whatever mutual truce they had with the locals, well, that was over. Finally, after numerous murders and unexplained disappearances, the townfolk could stand no more. Enough was enough. And they all agreed that it was time to go. And that's exactly what they did, all at the same time. The villagers packed up and walked away from Portlock, never to return. Even decades later, former residents refused to return to the former cannery town for fear of the Nantinuk, or big hairy man. Former Portlock resident Melania Helen Keel was interviewed by Naomi Kluda of the Homer Tribune back in October of 2009 and said things in Portlock had started out well enough but degenerated to such a point that the family left their home and fled to Nanwalek. The family had endured the murder of Melania's godfather, Andrew Kamluk, in 1931. Kamluk was a logger who was killed when someone or something hit him over the head with a piece of heavy log moving equipment. It was generally agreed that Kamluck was killed instantly, and that the murderer would have had to have been a true brute to wield the piece of equipment in question as a lethal weapon. See, this thing was very heavy. The family stuck it out in Portluck for more than a decade after the murder of Kamluck, but after being terrorized for such a long period of time, along with all the other villagers, they finally had enough. They picked up and left. We left our houses and the school and started all new here in Nanwalik, said Keel. Tales of murder and mayhem rolled out of Portluck on a regular basis in the 1930s and in the 1940s. They began to gain steam during the World War II years. Port Graham elder Simeon Kvasnikov told of an unexplained disappearance of a gold miner near the village during this time. He said that he went up there one time and never came back. No one found any sign of him. Another interesting aspect of the Portluck story was relayed to Clouda by an Anchorage paramedic who preferred to remain anonymous. He stated that in 1990, while I was working as a paramedic in Anchorage, we got called out on an alarm for a man having a heart attack at the state jail in Eagle River. He was a native man in his 70s, and after I got him stabilized with IVs, oxygen, and cardiac drugs, my partner and I began to transport him to the native hospital in Anchorage. En route to the hospital, the paramedic and the native man, an Aleut from Port Graham, talked about hunting. The paramedic had been to Dogfish Bay and was once weathered in there. This old man sat up on the gurney and grabbed me by the front of my shirt. He got right up to my face and said, "Did it bother you?" Well, with that question, the hair just stood up on the back of my head, and I said, "Yes." "Did you see it?" was his next question. I said, "No." "Did you see it?" And he said, "No, but my brother's seen it. It chased him one time." Now, many dismiss the tales that have come out of Portluck due to the aggressive nature of the Sasquatch. For that is surely what the Nantinuk is, if it is real at all. While it is true most wood ape or Sasquatch encounters end peacefully enough, that is not always the case. The Alaskan version of the species, if reports are to be believed, seems to be especially cantankerous and even murderous. In 1900, a group of hair-covered creatures ran at a prospector who had climbed a tree in an attempt to get his bearings near Thomas Bay. The prospector said they were the most hideous creatures he's ever seen. "I couldn't call them anything but devils." The prospector, upon seeing the creatures advancing on him, was able to drop down out of the tree, get to his canoe, and make his escape in just the nick of time. He had no doubt in his mind that, had he not seen the creatures in time, they would have made short work of him. In 1920, one Albert Petka, who lived on his boat near Nulato, Alaska, was attacked by a bushman. His dogs were able to eventually drive off the attacker, but the damage was done, and Petka's injuries proved fatal. He was, however, able to tell his story of his attack just before dying. In 1943, during the height of the siege at Portluck, a violent attack took place on DeWild's camp near Ruby, Alaska. The victim, John Meyer, or some reports say John McQuire, or the Dutchman, as he was called by the local natives, was killed by an assailant thought to be the Bushman. He was badly beaten, but his dogs eventually were able to run the killer off. Meyer was able to get to his boat and travel to the nearest village to seek help, but unfortunately he died of internal injuries shortly after arriving. He was, however, once again able to relate his story before passing. These are just a few of the reports of harrowing encounters with large, hair-covered bipeds that have come out of our northmost state. There are more. The point here is that to dismiss the story of Portluck out of hand due to the murderous behavior of the alleged Sasquatch involved would be a mistake. tales of violent encounters, or even abductions, attributed to wood apes have been told by Native Alaskans for hundreds of years. There is precedence for this sort of behavior by these animals, for whatever reason, in Alaska. Now, you may not believe the entire town could be terrorized by a rampaging wood ape to the point that residents would abandon it. You may feel the strange story of Portlock, Alaska is, at best, greatly exaggerated, and at worst, completely fictional. What cannot be denied, however, is that Portlock was once a thriving community, and that in 1949, the residents left abruptly, for no apparent reason. They left their houses, tanks, wharfs, pilings. They left their livelihoods and fled to a nearby village like English Bay and Port Graham. Also true is that residents of these two communities refuse to visit the ruins of Portlock to this very day. These two facts alone give the story the ring of truth. Something happened on the Kenai Peninsula back in the 1930s and 1940s. Something bad. What would cause all of the residents of what appeared to be a small, peaceful community in the Alaskan wilderness to just pack up all of their stuff and leave so suddenly? Not only did they all leave, but most of them never talked about why. Only a few, many years later, told their incredible story to a friend or loved one. If what the town people experienced wasn't an attack from some strange, ill-tempered, hairy creature, then what? Did all of the townspeople gather in the center of town and all agree to leave the following day, never to tell anyone why, and then just before each one of them died, be sure to tell someone you know that a group of hairy men attacked us and that's why we left? All of it in order to pull off some massive goof on the public years later? I seriously doubt it. Something happened. Something that made everyone pick up and abandon their homes, their lives, everything. Something terrifying. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. We're back with Expanded Perspectives. Man, what a terrifying story. If that's true, that these hairy creatures ran the inhabitants of that town, they had to leave, they ran them out of town. What an incredible story. You know, I can only think in the 30s and 40s up in the remote parts of Alaska that maybe something like that is possible. But anyways, very chilling.
Well, I'll tell you what I think about this. And it goes back into, you know, you and I was years ago when we were discussing, as oddly as it was, folks, we've talked about this. Kyle and I wanted to take a trip to Africa years ago and go over there, of course, and hunt. That's what we wanted to do. Now, both of us have since passed that. We don't even want to go over there for any of those reasons at all anymore. Malaria. Now. But yeah, but we used to discuss the fact of reading all these Capstick books that the stories that you would get about the numbers of people that were killed or injured was only a small percentage of what really happened, because you have to think about the ones that weren't reported. These remote areas that don't report anything like that. There's nobody there to take the report. There's nobody there to document this case of any of this happening. And it always makes me wonder like that up in these remote towns, like up in Alaska, or even these remote villages or something that are anywhere up in those areas like that. Or you start talking about Siberia, these remote townships of, could there have been stuff like this go on multiple times and we just don't know it because nobody's ever reported on it? It's just one of those things. Like I think back of, like you're talking about, I think back of the early 1900s into the 1920s and stuff. And I even think back as far back as in the gold rush, even the stuff that could have happened that was never reported on.
Yeah.
Because of these interactions. And for some reason, things like that, it always It just feels more real. I just like the romantic idea. Well, I know it's terrifying, but I like the romantic idea of it.
Yeah, well, you're talking about several of the cases are never reported, but then there are cases that are reported. Mm-hmm. That's what we're telling. Their elders, these old Native Americans, are saying that they have these stories of these hairy hominids and the stories of these giants and things. Why are we so always dismissing what the locals tell us?
That's the biggest question.
I think that now maybe Sasquatch was a thing and just doesn't exist anymore. Much like the dodo bird or something like that. You know, maybe back in the 30s and 40s, there were still a few left. And now, of course, they've passed on. There is no more. Mm-hmm. So at one time it was real and now it's not. I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
But I just like the stories. They're scary. Who doesn't like a scary story?
And for some reason, like I say, it just feels real. It feels like this could be things that happen like this. Look, I got something in closing that I'm going to discuss with y'all. Because I've been doing this a little bit. I just started this new year, new me.
Right.
I'm going to try this more and more and see what happens. This actually comes from a research digest. They're the British Psychological Research Society, or the Psychological Society. They say that a daily shower seems to have some psychological benefits. It says exposing your body to cold water has been promoted as a health tonic since at least the Roman period.
Right.
They say, so it's about time we give it some investigation. So they did apparently a looking into it in the Netherlands. And it involved more than 3,000 people taking daily showers that ran cold water for at least the last 30 seconds each time. It says the clearest finding was a 29% reduction in sickness for those who took cold showers compared with their colleagues who weren't involved in the challenge. The length of the cold blast, it says whether 30 seconds or 90 seconds, didn't matter. However, cold showers didn't provide an immunization against sickness as such, it says, but the challenge participants felt ill as frequently as their colleagues. Said it's just somehow they were better able to fight through it and make it to work. So for some strange reason, taking a cold shower is helpful to kind of strengthen your immune system up, maybe mentally, psychologically. And it made me go back to a video that I had seen a couple of weeks ago that was allegedly from Russia, where it shows a bunch of little kids, looks like they're kindergartners.
I saw that.
We even discussed it, I think, where they run out and they're throwing the cold water and they're playing in the snow and all they're wearing is a pair of swim trunks. It always makes me wonder. Apparently, there's not a lot of evidence there showing that there's something it could do. Because what it says here, it says participants reported a small increase in quality of life after 30 days, but that disappeared when remeasured later. They're talking about the influence of this chilling treatment. Goes in there. It says, but they did report some other benefits, such as higher energy levels comparable to drinking a coffee, and over 2/3 chose to continue the challenge for 2 more months. So they can't explain why that is. So I'm sure they're going to be doing a little bit more research into this, but it's almost like there's some sort of an adrenaline dump. There's some sort of adrenal surge in some way due to this cold water. Now, I have heard people say that if you want to fight acne, it was always like, if you've got acne after a hot shower and you've washed, turn on the cold because it makes your pores tighten up and it seals them off and it's not as likely to have this. I don't have any idea, but I just thought this was interesting. They're like, so I've started doing it. So I've started doing it for 30 seconds. Now, look, it's cold, especially in this time of year, and the water comes, you kill that hot water, your body's used to it, and you let cold water blast all over your body for 30 seconds. It's chilly. But if you do it every day, I used to work with a guy right out of high school when I was in construction, and he was a Hispanic fella, and of course he spoke no English, but we called him, and he answered, it was Chava was his name. And I estimated him jet black hair, big black mustache, big giant Cheech and Chong, big Cheech mustache. The dude was awesome. And I would probably say he was mid-20s. I'd say 25 to 28 when I was like 18. Turns out he was 42 years old.
Wow.
And we would always, how do you look so, he said he had never taken a hot shower his entire life. That any time he bathed, it was either room temperature or cold, because he had came up from Mexico, and even where he lived, he would never take hot. He'd never had hot water on his body.
Right, so he's not used to it.
He was not used to it, and he swore that that's the key. He's like, I'm never sick, and I'm never. You don't wrinkle. But he goes. Now this is through other guys that worked with us that could speak Spanish and English, because I could pick up a few things, but nothing fluent. And he would tell us, and his idea is because you make things hot, and they get floppy. You keep things cold, they stay tight. tight.
Right, yeah.
That was his whole idea behind it. And I don't know what happened to him, but literally he was in his 40s, and I would have swore he wasn't older than, okay, let's say 26, 27. I mean, perfect skin, no, you look at me now, I look like a road map. I don't have crow's feet. I got condor feet in the corner of my eyes, some laughing. And not this dude, man. This guy was pristine. So I'm like, so that's kind of this whole thing rolled into that. So folks,
take
let's
you some
do
cold
it.
Showers.
Let's
yeah.
do it, folks. Let's a bunch of us get together. Let's see what happens. Do it for 2 months. Let's set aside 60 days. Every time you take a shower, the last 30 seconds, folks, do it straight cold and let me know what you feel. Let's see what we can find out.
Well, if you want to also do some more self-improvement, you might want to try meditation. I've been starting to do this, mm-hmm. and I got inspired through Gaia. Gaia is a sponsor of the show. Thank God they are. They help us out a lot. Mm-hmm. But if you join Gaia, it's a streaming service. They have several things. And one of the things they have on there is yoga, transformation, films, and documentaries and stuff. But they have a whole section dedicated to just meditation. And, you know, I've started to implement it in my life. And I've noticed that just sitting and being alone with just my thoughts for just a few minutes a day, it really helps my focus. And you can go on there and they have tons of shows about meditation, how to do it, how to calm your heart, how to meditate for reducing fear and anxiety, like you were talking about earlier. They teach you how to do meditation in the morning, in the evening, all types of things. And along with that, they have the Seeking Truth section, which I really love. And one of the things over there, of course, is this deep space underneath the paranormal and unexplained and secrets and cover-ups. Let's listen to this video.
Asteroid belt is really the remnant of an ancient planet between Jupiter and Mars. Is it possible a species inhabited this missing planet thousands or even millions of years ago? If that's true, could it be they escaped before its destruction, only to land and inhabit our Earth?
There is an alien presence. It's been here for a very long time. It has reached Earth because of war. John Brandenburg's work opens the question, what happened 300,000 or a million years ago on Mars that he claims the evidence is hard that there were two hydrogen bomb explosions?
Here is Mars xenon versus Earth xenon. Earth is in blue. You can see they overlay very well for the isotopes 132, 134, etc. But at 129, Mars has 2.5 times more xenon-129 than the Earth does. And by the way, it has this, you could put any other planet up there and it would look the same. Mars is different from every other planet. It has this big load of xenon-129. And sadly, this is weapon signature.
One man who retired from the Defense Intelligence Agency in 1999 sought me out. And we met with a man from the World Bank in Baltimore at the harbor. And for 7 hours, this man was provoked by a section of my book having to do with cloning technology. But he explained that his job for 23 years in the Defense Intelligence Agency was to analyze and monitor the geopolitical territorial conflict of three different extraterrestrial groups inhabiting this world.
Deep Space is a very interesting series. It's kind of like Ancient Aliens, although I think it's better. And there's a whole bunch of neat ones over there, though. Ancient Origins and stuff like that, mm-hmm. with Michael Tellinger, things like that. But I really really appreciate the Deep Space series. If you want to sign up for it, it's Gaia.com, G-A-I-A.com. You can sign up. It's $9.95 a month if you go by monthly, or you can buy a quarterly or even a yearly. And, of course, the bigger the package, the cheaper it gets per month. I think if you buy the annual plan, it's only like $7.95 a month. And it's a streaming service like Hulu or Netflix or anything, and you have access to over 7,000 videos. And like I said, man, the yoga and the meditating and stuff. Now, I haven't started doing any yoga, but I would like to try that one day, the hot yoga and stuff.
I want
to
try it.
It looks very interesting. I mean, I know that, you know, just stretching and stuff, I'm not near as flexible as I was, say, 4 or 5 years ago. And it's probably because I just never stretch. I never do it. But I would like to get into that. I know my wife did yoga for a long time. She hasn't done it, of course, in like 4 years, but she used to do it. And I try to encourage her. I'm like, man, you should get with some of your girlfriends and start trying to do that. Like, even if it's on the weekend or whatever, I'll watch the kids or whatever while you go over there and do some yoga for an hour or so. Hey, look, folks, I'm not trying to preach to anybody, but we should all strive to do a better job this year than we did the last, right? Even if it's just little things. Maybe floss your teeth more than you used to.
Whoa. Ease up there.
Or
ease
whatever. There. You know what I mean. Also, if you're interested in becoming an Expanded Perspectives Elite member, you hear us do the commercials for it all the time, and you already like the show. You're like, well, I don't know if I would like Elite. If you like Expanded Perspectives, you're going to like Expanded Perspectives Elite. It's the same thing as we're doing now. There's just no commercials. There's no ads. And, you know, sometimes we curse a little bit. Not over the top, but that show, the Expanded Perspectives Elite show, is not rebroadcast over other radio networks. But I would like to give you a sneak peek of Elite. So let's listen to that. There is perhaps no greater phantom attacker in the history of the unexplained in America than the legend of the Mad Gasser of Mattoon, a bizarre figure who wreaked havoc in a small Illinois town in 1944. This creature turned out to be so elusive that local law enforcement officials eventually declared him non-existent, despite dozens and dozens of eyewitness reports and actual physical evidence that was left behind at the scene of some attacks. Making matters even more interesting was a series of nearly identical attacks that took place in Botetourt County in Virginia back in 1933 through 1934. Both of these cases of attacks involved a mysterious figure who was always seen dressed in black, who came and went without warning, left little in the way of clues behind, and for some reason, sprayed a paralyzing gas into the windows of unsuspecting residents. This gas was never identified in either case, and both cases involved fairly isolated areas where the attacks took place. The homes that were attacked in Virginia were in Arroyo County, and Mattoon, at that time, was a small central Illinois town with no large cities in the vicinity. The police, in both instances, were completely clueless. Who or what attacked the unsuspecting citizens of Illinois and Virginia? Was it a mad scientist? Was it a government agency? Or perhaps it was a visitor from another planet or realm? No one seems to know for sure. There you go. That's a snippet from the Mad Gasser of Mattoon. If you'd like to hear the rest of that episode, you're going to have to sign up for Elite. You can do that by going to the website, expandedperspectives.com, clicking on the Elite tab and signing up. It's $5 a month. And not only will you get an additional show every week, you'll have access to the entire back catalog, well over 100 episodes, totally worth the money for $5. Cam?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What do you got going on for the first week of 2017? Anything important?
Not really. Just getting everything laid out. Usually because of the way our year works, you know, it's already been passed. So we've already been a few months into our year at work. But with the way the weather looks, everything, I'll do a few repairs. And I think this week is going to be a wonderful week. The weather looks great. Everything looks smooth.
I think it's supposed to storm tonight, actually.
Yeah. And I think Friday is talking, but it's going to be cold, but I don't mind it cold. But I think it's actually going to work out pretty good. I do know this, that it's a lot of the guys that I work with, people that I see, they've been, of course, these last few weeks, people take off. I don't see. So I'm looking forward to getting back and seeing everybody, finding out what everybody did and the whole thing. And our good friends that we train with, Monty and Shandon, they just moved into their new home over the weekend. So we'll all probably be going down there for a big party here pretty quick. They're living right down there on the river, bud. So we're going to get to go down there and get our party on.
I'm just ready to get back into the routine of things. You know, with the kids being off yeah. school and stuff for almost 2.5 weeks, I don't feel quite right. We've had in-laws come over. Spend the night a couple yeah. nights. Your mother's living at your house now yeah. because she broke her hip.
yeah.
You know what I mean? I just want to get back into the routine. Well, that just about does it for this week's show of Expanded Perspectives. For all of you Elite members, we'll be speaking to you again on Friday. For everybody else, we'll talk to you again next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Happy New Year and peace, y'all.
get a good feeling, yeah. Get a good feeling, yeah. Oh, sometimes I get a good feeling, yeah. Get a feeling that I never, 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 never had before. No, no, I get a good feeling, yeah. Just wanna tell you. Thank you.